right, guys, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. It has been a hot minute. It's been a long time since I sat down at the mic to do a podcast of my own, and I apologize. It's just kind of the nature of the beast. This time of year, I get out in the field, which I look forward to all year long. And part of it's just my inability to sit down and put all my thoughts together and put out a podcast. And part of it's just I was busy and working on other things. But my apologies. You know, hopefully you give this one a listen, and hopefully I get back on track and get some content out. If you like the podcast, I would love it if you would, you know, message me, let me know how you like it, leave me a review online. That helps the podcast quite a bit. So if you like it, you want me to do more, let me know, and I'll try to be better at kicking them out. With that, I'm back in the office. As you guys know, I mostly bow hunt. I do still have a general season deer tag here in Utah. It's a dedicated hunter tag, so I could still run out and rifle hunt at the end of October, which I'll probably do. I know that my youngest kid's been begging to go out, so I think I'm going to get a chance to get him in the field, and hopefully the two of us get to go out and spend some time together and look over some deer. And, you know, if it works out, it works out. But I've still got that ahead of me. It's been an interesting season for me. It's been challenging, to say the least. At some point, I'll dive down the rabbit hole and I'll talk about each of those individual hunts. But basically, I had a Nevada archery deer tag. I had a Utah archery antelope tag. And then I had a Colorado archery bull tag. I was successful. I took a bull in Colorado, just a 5-point, kind of the second to last day I had to hunt. And I'm satisfied with that hunt to some extent, but it was a tough hunt in many ways. And at some point I'll probably end up, you know, talking about that and kind of divulging some lessons that I learned. That's the thing about bow hunting. It feels like no matter how long you do it, I've been doing it for a lot of years, it feels like there's still things that I can learn. There's still decisions that I can make that are better or the right decision to make at the right time. And still learning. Man, you would think after all these years, I feel like I would have mastered it, but I can't. Every situation's different. It feels like no matter how much work you put in, effort, there are things that just don't work out the way that you hope they would. But yeah, like I said, at some point I'll dive in and I'll talk about that hunt. Also archery, antelope tag. I killed a buck. Wasn't the buck that I was hoping for, but still a nice buck and eats really well. We had burgers the other night again, and it seems like I can't get enough of that antelope meat. I might have to figure out a way to try to put a couple of antelope tags in my pocket every year, because they're one of my very favorite wild game meat. Yeah, then I had an archery deer tag in Nevada, which is a tough hunt. Hot, super hot, open country. Man, just a kind of a tough year, to be honest. But since I've been back, I've been getting a lot of questions. And I thought maybe a good first podcast back would be to answer a lot of those questions. Some of them I got to in my DM, some of them I haven't. So if I did and I got back to you and you got a reply, I hope you don't mind the repeat. But I think it's good to kind of put some of this information out for a larger audience, because I think maybe many of you have a similar type of question. So with that, I'm going to do kind of a Q&A today. It's going to be a solo episode. I'm just going to run through some of the questions that I got, and hopefully help somebody out. Like I said, I'm going to try to get back on track and doing more podcasts in the future. I know I say that. I think I've said that before. I don't know how many times, but hold me to it. If you guys like the podcast, leave me a review. Reach out, let me know, and I'll try to get more consistent about getting podcasts out. Before I get going, kind of run through some question and answer. I want to shout out and just recognize Matthews as a sponsor. You know, Matthews makes a great product, a great bow. They've got some cool things in store for 2025. I think you guys are going to be excited about that bow. There's just some new stuff on the market, and you know, I'm going to touch on maybe a couple of those further down in the questions. But shout out to Matthews. I appreciate those guys being a great company to work with and being a sponsor of the podcast. Also, if you guys want to sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account, which you should. In my honest opinion, I think it's a phenomenal value. You know, it's $149 a year. You can use the promo code GAMETRAIL to sign up for an insider account. And when you do, you're going to get 50 points back in the Go Hunt Gear Shop. 1 point is $1. You can use those $50 towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. And, you know, the shop's got great gear. I continually am amazed at the buyers we have here. You know, we do a lot of talking internally about the gear and equipment that we want to bring into the shop. And those guys do an awesome job of securing and procuring new gear and getting it into the Go Hunt Gear Shop. They make some really, there's some great stuff on the market, and we try to carry the best of the best. So sign up, use the promo code GAMETRAIL and get yourself 50 points and also get yourself a Go Hunt Insider membership. A lot of the questions that I got are in reference to looking ahead. It's hard to believe that we're already kind of moving past hunting season. You know, for me, I'm primarily a Western big game bow hunter. And so when I get past September, unfortunately, most of my hunts are pretty well over. I know a lot of the Midwesterners, the East Coast folks have still got some hunts out there, and really prime time for you guys is November. And I'm still trying to put something there together so I can get out and get myself on a tree stand and hopefully get a chance to shoot a whitetail. But for me as a Western big game hunter, by the time I get the end of September, my season's pretty well over. There still are some late season archery hunts that happen, whether it's deer on the OTC hunts in Arizona, or, you know, late season archery elk in a state like Arizona, or maybe even New Mexico. But there are, you know, some hunts still out there. But for the most of us that are bow hunters, elk season's over. And it's a tough pill to swallow, if I'm being completely honest. It feels like every year I kind of fall into a little bit of a depression after September's over. It's my very favorite month of the year. Getting to hear and interact with bull elk is one of my very favorite things. I can't even really put it into words, to be honest. I just love it. I love that that interaction. I love to hear those bulls bugle. I love that hunt every year, so I look forward to it. So I always fall into a little bit of a slump, if you will, post September. But it has me already kind of thinking and looking towards 2025. And, you know, the rifle hunts are going to kind of come and go through October, November. And then once you get into December, the holiday season, you move into early January, you've got a bunch of those state draws that start to open up, including Wyoming. So Wyoming elk for non-residents, you got to start looking at it and thinking about it and kind of putting your application strategy in place so that when that January timeframe opens up, you can get applied and make the best choice for you. So with that, that's kind of what I'm already thinking about. It's clear to me based on a bunch of the questions that I've got. It's on a lot of your minds as well. You guys are kind of already thinking about next year and how to get a permit for September. So with that, I'm just going to jump into some of the questions. The first question that I got is in regards to Idaho. So the question is, are the chances of getting an Idaho over-the-counter tag better in person? So what this person is referring to is those non-resident general season tags for deer and elk that Idaho allocates, and those are allocated on a you know, quote unquote first come first serve basis. They're sold over the counter or online. Basically, in years past, what they do is the day that they go on sale, you log into your computer, and what it does is it puts you in a virtual queue. So you're assigned a random number in the queue, and when your number comes up, you have an opportunity to purchase an over the counter elk or deer general season license for either the area if you're looking at deer, or the zone for elk. And last year I played this game. I've played it every year, but last year I played the game and I got one of the lowest random numbers in the queue that I think I've ever gotten, and I felt really good about my chances of getting the elk zone, or maybe even, you know, one of my top five zones that I'd picked out. So I waited it out. My number came up and the zones that I had wanted to purchase were gone. And I was surprised, because in years past, I'd got much worse numbers and it felt like some of those tags were still available to me. So I was a little bit surprised in the fact that I had a better number in the queue, but yet those units that I wanted to hunt were gone. A lot of the tags were gone, actually. So kind of started doing some asking around, and it sounds to me like people showed up in droves in Idaho to actually buy permits over the counter. It sounds like people that showed up either to a game and fish office or to a participating sporting goods store were purchasing permits for themselves, also purchasing permits for other hunters and their party, basically took their information, were able to purchase permits for them. And I think a lot of those areas went to people that showed up in line. So in answer to this person's questions, yeah, it does seem to me, and based on the people that I've talked to, based on kind of what the information I can gather within the industry and with also talking to other hunters, it does seem to me that your chances of getting an over-the-counter elk or deer general season license in Idaho are better if you are willing to show up to a Game and Fish or a sporting goods store and actually purchase your permits in person. You know, last year I had threatened to drive to Idaho and do that. It just didn't work out for me based on my schedule. I also had this elk tag that I knew I was going to draw in Colorado, so I wasn't too worried if I didn't get that permit. But I think if Idaho is on your agenda, if it's in your strategy for getting permits for 2025, I would suggest you strongly consider going to Idaho and making that purchase. I did a little look in, and it does look like that is going to open up on December 10th this year, 2024. Those are going to go on sale to non-residents. So put that on your calendars. And in answer to that question, I do think you have better chances of getting a permit. It's a commitment, but it does seem that your chances of getting the tag that you want in the zone or the unit that you want for deer are better if you show up in person. So I guess plan accordingly. Second question I got is in regards to Arizona over-the-counter archery deer, kind of how that works, what the sale date's going to be like. So basically, you might be aware, but basically Arizona had an over-the-counter archery season for deer. They still have one. You can buy it over-the-counter. It has been capped for non-residents, so there is a limit to the number of permits that are sold to non-residents. I know that in the last few years, those have remained for a few days, even where those were still available to buy online. Tentatively, I believe the date is going to be November 7th, but I haven't seen anything hard and fast that suggests that is actually going to be the date. But tentatively, November 7th, 2024, those tags will go on sale for the 2025 season. Another change with that OTC system for deer in Arizona is that each individual unit that is available to hunt has a quota, and you have to check that quota before, you know, you can go out and hunt it. And then I believe you have to check it every 2 days. So every 48 hours, you need to kind of check in and make sure that there's a quota available still to keep hunting. As you look through the quota, I was looking through it the other day. A lot of those have been filled for this year. So there is still a portion of that season coming up in December. So if you'd bought a permit last year, there's still seasons opening in December that you could go out and try to fill your deer permit in 2024. A lot of those have been filled. There's still quite a bit of opportunity. I was actually quite surprised that the quota that's still available. So if you had a permit, I bought one. I know Omar in our office has bought one. I haven't been to Arizona yet to hunt, but I could still run down there mid-December and hunt those season dates and try to fill that permit. I just need to be aware of the units that I can hunt and which units still have an open quota for deer. If you get further into the southern units, you get down there by the Mexico border, quite a few of those still have quotas that are open. It does, when you look on the Arizona Game and Fish website, it does give you the remaining number of deer that can be harvested within each individual unit. I still think it's a good opportunity. If you think that you would have time in your schedule to go out and go archery deer hunting, I still think it's worthwhile. Most people are going to pile down there in January of 2025 and try to fill their permit because that's when those deer are going to be rutting. And that is still probably the best season to go out and fill your permit. I still think it's worth it, but it's probably not as worth it as it used to be where there wasn't the quota system. You know, it felt like you could go down there and pick a unit and go hunting you know, you could kind of hunt the units that you'd hunted year in and year out. Now those quotas are kind of being filled up, so it's taking some of those off the table, but I still think it's worthwhile, still worth looking at if you got a hole in your schedule, if you're trying to fill in some opportunities that are either, you know, January, maybe late December in those areas that are still open. I still think it's worth it. So take a look at the Arizona over-the-counter deer sale. Like I said, tentatively opening November 7th for that 2025 season. Next question concerning Colorado elk. This has been a hot topic, and I don't know that I'm going to have a a hard and fast answer. It's going to be interesting. It's going to probably take a few years for it to play out and see what people do in Colorado. And basically what I'm speaking to is in Colorado for 2025, all the archery elk tags in each unit will be allocated through a state draw. So it used to be that we had over-the-counter elk hunting opportunities for archery in Colorado. You could just show up and buy those. That's no longer the case going into 2025. Those are all going to be allocated through a state draw, and you will have to use your points. So if you apply for one of these units that was an over-the-counter unit, it's now a draw unit. You know, if you had points, it's going to utilize and burn your points if you draw that as a first choice. So it's something you want to be aware of, you want to think about. There's a lot of people asking, what is that going to do for your opportunity to get an elk tag in Colorado? I would say if history tells us anything, if you look at some of those units in the past 2 years that were over-the-counter elk units that have gone draw, it looked to me like that first year they were relatively easy to draw with no points or even as a second choice. I'll take unit 74, for example. So the first year that that went to a draw, I applied for it as a second choice, ended up drawing it as a second choice. I wasn't actually able to go on that hunt, so I turned my tag back in. Looking at that hunt the next year, it went in the draw. I believe that that year it went in 0 points. Everybody that applied with 0 points drew that permit. There were very few people, if I recall, that were allocated that permit as a second choice. So it got increasingly harder to draw. There were more people willing to apply for that as their first choice with no points and draw that permit and guarantee themselves an opportunity to go hunting. So I would suspect if you kind of look at the history of these OTC units that have become draw units, I would think that probably this first year, they're going to be units that you could draw as a second choice. Moving into 2026, it's probably going to become increasingly harder to draw. So there's going to be more people willing to apply for that hunt as their first choice so that they can guarantee themselves an elk tag and a chance to go hunting. I just see those kind of progressively getting harder. To draw. And that's what my gut says. In terms of how many permits will be available for each one of those OTC units that are now a draw unit, I believe typically what they've done is they've taken the number of hunters surveyed, I want to say, that have hunted those. And my understanding is that 25% of those are going to be allocated to non-residents. Many of those, you know, there was a lot of people that hunted those units. So the chances that they're going to issue a lot of permits is pretty good. There's probably going to be a lot of permits available to people in the draw for those recently converted OTC to draw units. You probably want to be familiar. You look down through the hunter survey to see the units where the most people were hunting. That would give you an indication, I think, as to how many permits there might be allocated and ultimately the units that are probably going to have more elk tags available. If you kind of want my gut on what I think as far as strategy goes, what I'm thinking I'm going to do is I'm going to pick one of those that I think has a good elk population, that looks like it might be available as a second choice. And my plan is to apply for preference point as a first choice and apply for one of those areas as a second choice and hope that I get it. If that's not the case, so if it turns out that more people are willing to apply for those as a first choice just to guarantee themselves the chance to go hunting, my hope is that some of those will slip through in either the leftover or the turnback list, and I'll be able to pick one of those up as a turnback option. No guarantees. So like I said, it's going to probably take a year or two to kind of figure out that system, kind of see where those units are going to land as far as the number of people that are willing to apply and how many points it's going to take to draw. But that is kind of my plan and kind of what I'm thinking. The hunt that I just went on in Colorado was a good hunt, and it didn't require all that many points to draw. So I am hesitant to completely go all in on, you know, drawing one of these recently converted OTC to draw units and just putting that as my first choice to guarantee myself a permit. I'd still want to build a preference point and be able to put a preference point or two in my back pocket to draw a tag in the future. And there's some hunts in Colorado that I feel like just with a few points, you can have a really good fun hunt with a lot of interaction with some nice bulls, not giants by any means, but some nice bulls. So my plan is to try to still build some preference points and hopefully continue to give myself an opportunity to go hunting by drawing a permit as a second choice or picking one up off of a leftover list. I will see if that strategy works. It's hard to say. It's probably never been more paramount to have a multi-state process or strategy, if you will. I recently bought my Montana preference point, my Montana bonus point. I'm going to try to capitalize on that in one of these coming years to get a chance to go hunting up there. I don't have to have like multiple elk tags in, you know, every state every year. I just personally, where I'm at with my stage in life and my kids, it's really tough to do that. You know, two is probably doable. Even that's kind of pushing it. I've been pretty vocal and said on other podcasts in the past that I really like to focus my time on one hunt. I feel like I'm a better hunter. I feel like I'm more successful if I have more time and effort to really put into just one solo, you know, elk hunt a year. So I'm not trying to hunt every single elk state every year, but if I can get one permit, I feel pretty good about it. But you do pretty much at this point in time have to have a multi-state strategy. So that preference point, bonus point purchase period in Montana has passed, but the one in Wyoming is still open through the end of October. So if you don't have any points in Wyoming, or if you even got a few points, I would still plan on picking up your preference points in Wyoming. Wyoming was interesting this year in that the cost of that special license went up an exorbitant amount. If you want my opinion, it's a lot of money to spend on an elk tag. You're pushing, you know, over $2,000. If you're looking at antelope, you're over 1,000. It's a lot of money for those species. Consequently, you did see fewer people that are willing to pay that higher price for that special tag. And I'm still trying to work through and figure out if I can stomach, you know, paying $2,000 for a general season elk tag in Wyoming. I don't know that I can. I'm going to figure it out and see if it's something I can make work. But for those of you that can, if it means that much to you, there are definitely some opportunities. And it does look like the reaction to that cost going up is that more people were willing to pay that amount and that the odds did get better in the special draw, especially if you start looking at some species like mule deer or antelope. Even general season elk for sure. So food for thought. I might have to save my pennies one of these years and put that money into a special tag and see if I can get a chance to go back to Wyoming and hunt elk. So I guess the long and short of it, buyer points. You know, you got to have a multi-state strategy. Hopefully that kind of answers some of those questions about draws. I'm sure I'll do a deeper dive into, you know, Colorado, whether that's on this podcast or on the Big Hunt Guys podcast, where we talk about those changes and we get a chance to kind of flesh out some numbers and see what those permit numbers are going to look like for those individual units. It is interesting to me, I should say, that they kept open the second and third rifle seasons as OTC Unlimited. I do think you're going to have more people that are going to jump ship that have been going out to hunt archery during the rut. You know, they just want a chance to hunt elk, maybe put some meat in the freezer. I think you'll probably see a fair number of those people jump and ship and just doing the OTC second and third rifle season. If I'm being completely honest, it's even tempting to me. I'm a pretty diehard bow hunter, but if I can build preference points for an archery hunt in the future, still go out and hunt second and third rifle season and get a chance to put an elk in the freezer, it's something I'm pretty strongly considering. So I think you'll definitely see more people in the field on those second and third rifle seasons. Man, a lot of changes in Colorado. I'm hearing some things about their draw system might change. I think you're going to see more people in the field on those rifle hunts. I don't suspect that it will be too much longer before you see those seasons potentially becoming draw only as well for non-residents. So tough times, but again, it's not completely bleak. You just have to be a little bit more cognizant, a little bit more mindful, and have your application strategy and all figured out before you kind of roll into those spring months. All right. I had a question. I've had several questions about several people are kind of already asking if they're already looking at going on their, maybe their first out-of-state hunt, or maybe they've built a few points. And a lot of them are wanting to know where to start in terms of a multi-state strategy. Is it worth buying points? Is it worth applying? What states should be avoided? So I thought it would be good to just do a run through real quick and kind of run through the states that I think that you ought to have on your agenda to apply for, and then some states that you probably ought to avoid unless you're a resident. So to start out, I guess I would say that the states that I avoid personally as a non-resident, I avoid Washington, I avoid Oregon. Applying in both of those states is extremely expensive, and I don't think the cost-value analysis is there. I just don't think they're worth applying for. I don't apply for California. Not worth it, in my opinion. So the states that I do think are worth applying for, I think New Mexico is a great state to apply for. There is no point system in New Mexico. It's completely random. You do have to front the cost of the permits that you apply for. You do have to buy a $65 hunting license. You have to pay the application fee when you apply. But the hunting down there is really, really good. And the fact that it's a random draw, I think is intriguing. It's interesting. It's like, you know, Christmas morning, every time their results come out, you just get to jump in there and see if you were lucky and you got that Red Rider BB gun that you were hoping for. But I always apply in New Mexico. I don't apply for all species all the time because it can be extremely expensive to front the cost of those permits on a credit card. But I always apply for elk. I think antelope is a great option to apply for. Those tags aren't all that expensive. You know, maybe deer if you're interested, although it depends on your objectives. They don't kill a lot of giant bucks in New Mexico, but they do have good opportunities to hunt deer down there. But I would say at a minimum, think about elk and antelope. Also, maybe some of those exotic species if you're interested in them, like Barbary sheep, you know, Audad, if you will. I think that one's worth applying for. The tag is not all that much. So I would put New Mexico on your list. Utah. Utah is an interesting one because you do have to buy a hunting license to apply. Your odds of drawing a limited entry elk tag or a limited entry deer tag or a limited entry antelope tag or, you know, one of the big once in a lifetime species like moose, sheep, goat, bison. Those are extremely tough for a non-resident. You could apply for elk in Utah and never draw a permit ever in your lifetime. It can be really, really tough. General season deer tags are still relatively available within a few years for non-residents. So you'd have to kind of look at it and see what you think. Does the cost of applying, is it worth it to you in the random chance that you might draw one of those other permits and then, you know, pretty much guarantee yourself a chance to go general season deer hunting every few years? Personally, I think that it is. It's not all that expensive in terms of the hunting license. I think it's $120 for non-residents at this point. Pretty cheap for residents. And within a few years, you can get a chance to come out and hunt general season deer. And there's some nice bucks on general season units. Not a ton of them by any means. I wouldn't plan on coming out to Utah and hunting a general season hunt and, you know, killing a buck of a lifetime. But it does get you a chance to come out and come hunting. Utah's kind of one of those that I'd say it's kind of in the middle of the road. It just depends. It's a cost-benefit analysis, and it may not be worth it. It might be also if you like to hunt general season deer every few years. Colorado, I definitely think Colorado is worth applying for. It's worth building preference points for elk, deer, probably antelope as well. You know, the big species, moose, sheep, goat, probably not worth it, to be honest. It's pretty expensive to build up the preference points that you need to be able to be considered in the draw, and then your chances of drawing are extremely tough. So I would probably avoid those, but I do think it's worth building preference points, applying for deer, elk, and antelope in the state of Colorado. Arizona is, again, it's similar to Utah. The chances of drawing a elk tag are pretty tough. There aren't a lot of really good deer hunting units in the state of Arizona. Antelope hunting down there, the odds are atrocious. Sheep odds are atrocious for non-residents. You do have to buy a hunting license to apply in Arizona. Again, it's kind of a cost-benefit analysis. I do apply in Arizona because they do have late-season archery elk tags. that are relatively easy to draw with maybe 4, 5, 6 points. So I personally think that it's worth it, but for you, it may not be. It's one of those states similar to Utah. It's kind of on the fence in terms of whether you should or should not apply. You would just have to look at your budget and kind of make an analysis judgment call in regards to that. Nevada, the odds of drawing permits are extremely rough for non-residents. You do have to buy a hunting license to apply, which I think is about $160. It might be a little bit more off the top of my head. That sounds about right, but it's not cheap. I think all in, if you apply for all species in Nevada, you're going to be into that about $250, $260 as a non-resident. It is a random draw. They do give you 5 choices when you apply. They consider all 5 choices, and you could draw any one of your choices. Kind of allows you to stagger your choices, maybe a swing for the fences approach with your first few choices down to hunts is your 4th and 5th choice that have better odds. But even saying that, the odds of drawing a lot of permits in Nevada as a non-resident are extremely tough. I look at Nevada as it's my dream state, right? So I don't ever really plan on drawing a sheep tag or a elk tag, if I'm honest. It's just really, really tough. You know, maybe a deer tag every 5, 6, 7 years, possibly, if I'm willing to hunt archery in some of those mid to low tier units. Same for antelope, maybe an archery antelope tag in some of those mid to low tier trophy potential units. I would put it on par with Arizona and Utah in terms of being a non-resident. It's a state you really have to look at and decide if it fits in your budget. And again, it's a value-based judgment. How much is it worth to you? To me, if I ever drew an elk tag in Nevada, it would be incredible. They kill some great bulls. I see people having phenomenal hunts in Nevada. You know, there's people in the office that drew permits, and they've had great hunts. So for me, it's like, I'm going to come up with that money to apply just in the random chance that I actually draw. And they do give bonus points when you apply and you're unsuccessful. So your odds do get better. Excuse me, but the odds are never going to be great. If you look at them, they're pretty dang tough. So that leaves us with some states that I definitely think that you ought to be looking at. So I think Wyoming, you should definitely be applying in Wyoming. They do allocate a portion of the permits randomly. You do have to front the cost of those permits when you apply. If you don't, they will refund you that cost. That is kind of annoying, and they hold on to your money for quite a while, but it's worth looking at, worth considering. I definitely think you should be buying preference points in Wyoming for deer, elk, and antelope. I wouldn't worry about it for moose or bighorn sheep at this point. The odds are just atrocious, and it's just not worth it. Mountain goat, they do allocate randomly. The cost of those permits are extremely expensive, so that's a value judgment for you. It is random, no point system. So if mountain goat is on your bucket list and you confront the cost of that, it's worth applying in Wyoming. But really what it boils down to is I think everybody should be buying preference points for deer, elk, and antelope in Wyoming. And you should get a chance to go hunt that every maybe 5, 6 years. There are units for antelope and units for deer that you can draw much sooner. For elk, you're probably looking at that general season license, and that's going to take you anywhere from, depending on the zone that you apply for, if you apply for that southern zone or the western zone, you're probably looking, you know, in the special draw, maybe 3, 4 points. As you bump up into the regular draw, you're probably looking at that 4.5, 5, 6, 7 points, to be honest, at this point for those better regions, which would be the east and the west zones. Excuse me, the south and the west zones. So I do think you should be buying points. It should be on your schedule. Idaho. Idaho is a random draw for their controlled permits. I do think that their OTC permits are worth trying to get if you can get them. If you can drive to Idaho or fly there, show up to an office on December 10th to buy an OTC permit, I think it's worth it. The trophy potential is good in those general regions, and I think it's worth it. You do have to buy a hunting license in Idaho. Whether you buy an OTC tag or you apply in their control hunt drawings, the cost of that, I think, is about $185. So it's not cheap. Their draw for their controlled permits is random, so there's no point system, similar to New Mexico. So I think that's interesting. You might draw a great permit up there, and it kind of gives you the opportunity to apply for, you know, trophy quality type units, or maybe, you know, mid-tier opportunity style hunts. I kind of look at Idaho as I'm going to try to buy an OTC tag. And if I do that, I'm going to buy the hunting license. I'm also, if I get the OTC tag, great. If not, I'm still going to apply in their controlled draw and try to draw a good permit. So I would definitely think very strongly about Idaho, and I would approach it. I would encourage you to approach it like I do. Buy the hunting license, try to buy an OTC tag. If you get it, great. You got a chance to go hunting that year. If you don't, plan applying on the controlled draws. Even if you do get an OTC tag, you can still apply in those control draws. So I think that you should do so and potentially try to upgrade your permit to a better unit, better hunt. So that's kind of how I look at Idaho. Montana, you should be buying bonus points at a minimum. It's complex, Montana, but basically they have two different kind of ways that they allocate permits, or two different hunts. So they have a general season license for deer and elk, which they call the big game combo. So that's an elk tag and a deer tag general season. They have an elk combo, which is just an elk tag, you know, small game fishing. And then they have a deer combo, which is just a deer license, big or small game and fishing license. You have to apply for that and draw it before you can actually apply and be considered in the special limited quota hunts. So you apply at the same time, but you have to be successful in drawing that general season combo license before your limited quota application will even be considered. The general season licenses are allocated on a preference point system. You can buy a preference point going into the draw, which will guarantee you 1 point going into the draw. It's interesting in that Montana, 25% of their general season combo licenses are randomly allocated to people with no points. So you actually have better odds with no points than you do with 1 point. But, you know, buying that preference point going into it, if you're unsuccessful, you can buy another preference point in the preference point purchase period, and then you would essentially guarantee yourself a tag that next year. So it's kind of a gamble. You know, it's a frustrating system. I know Brady and I talked about it on the Big Hunt Guys podcast last week, kind of about our frustrations in Montana. And it's tough to explain on a podcast. You know, we do have articles about it that'll kind of outline the whole entire thing. But in my opinion, I think Montana should be on your list. You should definitely be buying bonus points. You should potentially, depending on what your schedule looks like, be looking at buying preference points and applying for a general season combo tag. So those are kind of, that's kind of a run through on, the Western states. You know, that's kind of a general breakdown on how I look at it. I would say, you know, by and large, every year, if I want to go archery elk hunting, you definitely should be applying in Colorado. You should be building and applying in Wyoming. You should be trying to buy an over-the-counter tag in Idaho and then applying for their controlled draw. And you should also be applying and looking at ways that you can draw a general season and maybe a limited quota permit in Montana. Those are kind of your bread and butter. You know, any other state, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, New Mexico with that random draw, those are just kind of hopeful, right? You just hope that you get lucky and you draw a random permit. And like I said, states to avoid California, Washington, Oregon, unless you're a resident of one of those states. So that was a lot. I'm out of breath. And hopefully that helped you guys a little bit. I know that you probably have questions about individual states, so don't hesitate to reach out and ask. I know it can be complex. Really, that insider research platform is built for you guys to be able to kind of search through, comb through the various intricacies of each state draw and kind of help you build out your own strategy. Hopefully that helped you out. Next question, e-scouting question. Is it easier to e-scout on a computer than it is a tablet or a phone? And are there pros and cons to each of those? So the bulk of my e-scouting I do on my desktop computer with, you know, I've got, you know, two screens and my laptop. And the reason I like that is because I can open up multiple windows. I can look back and forth. It just gives you a much larger field of view. The 3D portion of our mapping platform works, in my opinion, a lot better with a mouse, to being able to kind of tilt pan, look at glassing points, look at canyons, looking at topography, looking at those elevation band layers using the slope aspect and elevation tools within maps. Looking at land ownership, kind of way that it lays on the land. To me, I find it much more user-friendly, much easier to do with a desktop computer and a mouse. I don't spend any time on a tablet. I do some scouting, e-scouting at night. Maybe I'm laying in bed and I'm just using my phone to kind of search through and, you know, look at some things, and it works okay. It's not ideal. And primarily all of my e-scouting before I leave on a hunt, I do on my desktop computer, with a mouse, because it's just so much more user-friendly and easier to use. Now, when I get out on a hunt, I am, you know, limited to just the screen on my phone. And I do a lot of e-scouting day to day on my phone when I'm in the field. Basically, to do that, you'll have had to download those layers for your hunt unit. And a lot of times you get out on a hunt, you go to plan A, you know, maybe you're not finding the animals that you hope to, or maybe, you know, you get into an area, you found an animal and you bumped them. You need to give that area a rest, and you're trying to look at, you know, plan B and C in proximity to where you're hunting. And I do a lot of e-scouting on my phone when I'm in the field. And when I was in Colorado just a few weeks ago, you know, midday, I did a lot of e-scouting on my phone, just looking at different areas, looking at canyons, looking for water sources. I use it a lot in the field, but I would say 99.9% of my e-scouting I do at my desk with my three screens and a mouse, because it's just so much user-friendly. Next question. So day pack recommendations for elk and deer hunting. I do a lot of backpack hunting, but I have been doing, like when I was in Nevada on my deer hunt or when I'm antelope hunting, I am using a day pack. There's no need to pack, you know, a 6,000, 7,000 cubic inch backpack on those type of hunts when you're just hunting close to front country or from your truck. So I use solo packs quite a bit. I've actually done more of that in the last few years than I have done in years past. I still like backpack archery elk hunting, and I'll use, this year I used the Kefaru Absorca, which worked awesome on the ARC frame. I killed a bull, ended up packing that bull out. It took me a couple days to do so. It was extremely comfortable. I guess I should say no pack, in my opinion, still. I still hold true. I've used every pack from every major brand, you know, minus EXO. I've used every pack. Every pack with 100 pounds on my back is not what I would call comfortable. I don't feel comfortable ever with 100 plus pounds on my back, and it might just be I need to hit the weight room that much more. But in my opinion, 100 pounds in a backpack is just uncomfortable. It's a lot of weight. And, you know, it's comfortable for short periods. You might get a mile, 2 miles into it and feel pretty good about life. But once you start into that 3 and 4 hour stretch, it becomes pretty uncomfortable. But I will say, for having that much weight on my back, it handled it extremely well. I found that the load shelf was extremely user-friendly. I didn't have any issues there. It held together great. Durability was awesome. I love the fact that their load shelf sits up high, similar to the Stone Glacier one. It kind of gets up above my hips, which gives me some motion in my hips, makes it easier for me to walk. So I had really good luck with that Kefaru ARC frame. I can't recommend it enough. It was a really nice, solid pack to use. So in terms of day packs, I still think you should have a day hunting pack that has a load shelf, because if you kill something, you know, you might only be a couple miles from the truck. You're still going to want to be able to pack weight between the bag and the frame. It's got to be able to handle a lot of weight. It's got to be durable. So I would still suggest those pack frames with load shelves built into them. So I would suggest, I've got a list here, the Stone Glacier Solo, I think makes an excellent day hunting backpack. It's got the load shelf. I've had the X-Curve frame from Stone Glacier since I think about 2017. I've used it every single year. I've used some Mystery Ranch on some various hunts as well, but I've used that Stone Glacier X Curve frame consistently for quite a few years, and it's always been really good for me. I really like that pack also for day hunting, so I would suggest that Stone Glacier Solo. The Kafaru Bedlam would be an awesome choice for you. In addition, the Kafaru Hellbender, again, both of those on the ARC frame with the load shelf, and the bags are just smaller. I like both of those. Moving over to Mystery Ranch. Mystery Ranch still makes the Pentler. They've had that thing in their lineup. We still have them in the Go Hunt Gear Shop. I think that makes an excellent day hunting backpack. And then the new Mystery Ranch Metcalf 50, which is a smaller Metcalf. It's less than 5 pounds. It has the load shelf. You know, they addressed some things in their frame this last year when they released the new Metcalf packs that I think were good steps, good progressive steps in their pack frame and in their bag. So I would suggest taking a good look at that Metcalf 50. It's also at a slightly better price point than either the Kafaru or the Stone Glacier, but I think all of those would make excellent day hunting backpacks. They're going to fit the gear that you need for a day hunt, and they're not so roomy that you can end up stuffing that thing with a bunch of stuff that you don't need. As you move later into the season, you know, think about as you're moving into October, although, you know, it's supposed to be 86 here today, it doesn't really feel like late season by any means, but as you move into those late season hunts, typically October, November, you might want a little extra room in those day hunting packs so that you can fit some extra insulation layers, some hand warmers. You know, you want to make sure that you have a fire starter kit, but you're going to end up packing more gear on a late season hunt. So you might need to adjust the volume of your backpack based on the time of the year that you're hunting, even for day hunting. So with that, I would consider those would kind of be my tops for you in terms of, you know, day hunting backpacks. All right, this is a good question. Is a tripod still in your kit now that the Zulu 6 binoculars are available? If so, why, how are you using it, and when? So this is an interesting question. You know, SIG Zulu 6 binoculars have the image stabilizing technology in them. Those are phenomenal binoculars, in my opinion, in terms of stability. It's really a pretty game-changing technology in terms of just out hiking. You know, you want to put your binoculars up, you want to have a stable view and be able to scan offhand with the stability of a tripod. Those are pretty incredible. I still think that they're the best binoculars, in my opinion, for archery elk hunting. You know, you're moving, you're on your feet, you know, you're calling, you want to glass the distant hillside and kind of see if there's any elk on it, or if you got a bull that's coming in, you want to be able to just kind of watch through your binoculars as that bull works in, which I did in Colorado recently. I still think that's the best option to have around your neck in a bino harness. Those are really incredible. You know, if you're going on a bear hunt, black bear hunt, maybe in Alaska, and you're cruising the shore in a boat and you're doing a lot of glassing from an unsteady platform like a boat, I think it makes awesome sense. It's a really good option. Horseback, if you're on horseback, you want to do some glassing, I think it's incredible. I did do some early archery deer hunting this year, and I did both. So one hunt, I just took the SIG Zulu 6s. Glassing off my knees. And then the other hunt, I went with a buddy here, and I was doing glassing off of a tripod. I use the Tricer tripod. I can't recommend it enough. It's an awesome tripod. I love that little minimal head that he's got with it. But I was using a pair of SLC Swarovski 15x56s, and then also just a pair of 10x42 Leicas. Here's my opinion. So I think that optically, clarity, the amount of light that it gathers, I think the picture is still better. I think it's quite a bit better, to be honest, in a Swarovski or a Zeiss, you know, a top tier Zeiss like an SF, or with a Leica, an Noctavid or an Ultravid. I think optically, clarity, light gathering ability, I think it's better in those optics. So if you're hunting deer, in my opinion, spot and stock species, you know, whether it's early archery deer or even that late season October, November timeframe, you're really just trying to pick up any kind of movement, or you're trying to, you know, you're looking for that white butt on a mule deer if you're coos deer hunting, I still think that those optics, those top tier optics on a tripod is the best option. You're going to, that's kind of the name of the game when deer hunting, it's spot and stalks. You're spending a ton of time covering ground methodically. You're looking into the shadows, you're looking into the timber, you're trying to pick up any little bit of movement of an ear or, you know, an antler tip on the edge of some timber and an open clearing. I think those are just optically better. And those would be, you know, my choice. Better choice for elk hunting. I think the Sig Zulu 6s are probably a better option for most people. Maybe you get into the late season and you do a lot of long range glassing from a sitting position. You know, maybe a tripod mounted pair of binoculars might be a better option. Antelope hunting, I think the Sig Zulu 6s are awesome for antelope hunting when you're covering ground, you know, in a vehicle. Most times you could just throw those things up and look and you get that stability that those offer. I think they're incredible. I just found that, you know, for deer hunting and you're really picking apart the landscape, I'm more comfortable behind a tripod. I'm not having to use, you know, my arms, you know, my arms fatigue. It's like I said, I need to hit the gym, I guess, but my arms fatigue from holding my binoculars up all the time. Or if I'm sitting with my knees up and I've got my elbows rested on my knees, that gets old. I just feel like I'm more comfortable behind a tripod. And I feel like the, you know, optically, clarity, light gathering ability is just better in those top 10 or those top tier optics. So that's my opinion. Hopefully it helps. I think if I was looking to buy, you know, one pair of binoculars for kind of a do all, I think those Zulu 6s are top notch, really, really tough to beat. So give them a look. I love those guys over at Sig, you know, good dudes, good company. I love what they're doing. I love the technology and I love that they're pushing the envelope. I think they make an incredible product and I think it definitely has its place. So check those out. Okay. This is another question. It's a good question. So this is brand new. I had a guy ask me on what my thoughts are on the new dialed, proof site. So this is a brand new bow site that was just launched this past week. Dialed's been in the archery sight game a few years. I want to say maybe 2-3 years at this point. They came out with the Arctos sight, Arcos maybe. I can never get that right. I love the fact that the proof is at least a little bit easier to say and remember. So they've had the dialed Arctos sight on the market, and I think they've had an opportunity to get feedback from a lot of people about that site, things that they liked, things that they didn't like. And I think this second iteration of a site from them looks incredible. I haven't had my chance to get my hands on one, put it on a bow and shoot it. But there are definitely some things that I really like about it. One, that the gang up and down vertical travel is lockable now. It looks like it's got three settings, one where it's completely open, where you can slide that thing completely up and down. A second position where it's got a little bit of tension, but if you had to move it, you could. And then a third position that completely locks that thing down. That looks awesome. And I know it's something that, you know, was feedback that I'd given them and many other people have as well. So I think that looks incredible. The overall looks of the site, the aesthetics of it look really good. I love the fact that their second and third access is accessible. It looks like you can completely lock out your left and right windage, which is awesome. I also like the new dial. It looks like it's got a little bit of bite to it. I like the positioning of it. It's got a lot of features that I really like, to be honest. I love the fact that they've got multiple pin options now, including a 3 and a 5 pin option that are horizontally mounted. I like horizontally mounted pins. Each one of those pins is micro adjustable. The pins are offered in a 10 or a 19, which I like. I like a 19 pin, which is a bigger pin. I love that the fact that they retain the bubble in the top of the sight. I personally found in that sight that was one of the features that I really liked the most, is I find I see it better out of my peripheral vision. And I love the fact that it kind of frees up my field of view with my bottom pin. So if I'm shooting, let's say I'm shooting a 5-pin sight and I've got my pin sighted in, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, my 60-yard pin is typically on a normal sight sitting like right above the bubble in the bottom of the housing. And the field of view is not quite as clear because the bubble's, you know, blocking a portion of the target that I'm aiming at. I like the fact that the dialed sight moves that bubble to the top of the housing and it frees up a better field of view for me with my bottom pins, which are your extended yardage pins. So I think that's really, you know, well thought out. I think it makes sense. I find that I see it better. So I love the fact that they retain that and they've included that in this new proof site. I'm really interested in getting my hands on one of these sites. I think it looks incredible. It looks like it's machined aluminum here in the United States, which I think is cool. I think they're a cool company. I love the marketing that they've done around that site. You know, if I had any beef with it, I think it's that it's, you know, a 5-pen site, I think is about $600, which is a lot, but it just seems like everything's more expensive these days. If you go to the grocery store or the gas station, you all kind of know that stuff just costs more, and archery sites are no different. It does seem to me that they've climbed quite a bit, so I don't love the price tag on it, but it does look like a premium product, a premium site, and, you know, I'm super interested in getting my hands on one. So I guess those are kind of my thoughts. I would say without ever actually having one in my hand or on my bow, I'm excited about it. And I'm glad to see that they made a lot of the changes that they did to that site based on feedback that people had given them. It looks like a really cool site. So I'm definitely interested in trying it. Next question. Okay. So this was an interesting one. You know, we had Chris B, we had Colby Hanley on from UltraView. We talked about their arrows, the 1K, the UV 1K arrows. We had a lot of people that viewed that. We had a lot of feedback from that episode. It feels like people are up in arms about the price tag on those arrows, which I get to some extent. It's a lot of money for 6 arrows. And the question was, are they worth it? Are those arrows worth it? So here's kind of where I've landed. We broke down on that podcast the cost per arrow. And that's an arrow that's completely built. So you get a premium component. You get a nice, I said premium, which you guys jumped on. You get a very nice component. So an insert system on the front end of that thing. You get filled tips with it, which is nice. I've never bought a dozen arrows where I had filled tips included. So that was a nice little added perk and bonus. The other thing I like about their filled tips is when you screw those things in, they've got a little rubber washer that fits in a groove on that filled tip. You screw those things in and they fit snugly. So it's not like every time I'm having to tighten those things back up if I'm up at the range shooting. So I love the fact that it's included and I love the fact that it stays tight. You get their vanes, which are their proprietary vane. I thought their vane was a good vane. I didn't notice it being any more accurate. It is quiet. It is a stiff vane. I thought that it did the job. I didn't notice anything that was extremely groundbreaking, I wouldn't say, but I do love the fact that they're pre-fletched. I don't have to fletch them. I hate fletching arrows, so I did love the fact that those came pre-fletched. They also come with a knock collar. They come with a really nice knock. So it's a complete built arrow, built out system. You order it, cut to length, inserts, you get it in a really nice box, really nice packaging. And when you crunch the numbers, you are paying more than you would for another arrow from another brand, like a Gold Tip Platinum Pierce or, you know, a Black Eagle Focus or a Victory Vap TKO. You're getting an arrow that is on par in terms of quality or better than those arrows, but they're completely built. And I guess the question I would ask is, how much is your time worth to you? Do you like building arrows? Do you like being in charge of building all your arrows? Do you like doing the cutting from both ends? Do you like doing the squaring? Do you like gluing in the inserts and then spinning those and, you know, building the straightest, most accurate arrow that you can build at home? And do you have the time to put into it? And, you know, I've made time for it over the years. I don't enjoy it. If I'm being completely honest, I don't really like building arrows. You know, it's nice to know that you have an arrow that's built by yourself, that is built the way that you wanted it built with all the components. But I don't necessarily enjoy it at this stage of my life, to be honest. I've built so many of them, I'm kind of sick of it. Also, there are other things I'd rather be doing, like shooting my bow, you know, going to a kid's game, you know, working and anything. It's tedious. Building arrows is a really tedious job at this stage for me. So for me, that's worth something. I do think it's an incredibly straight arrow. The tolerances on them are super tight. The components are nice. They're pre-built. So I would say, is it worth it? In my opinion, yeah, I think it is, but again, it just depends on, on how you feel about it, how much money you have to put into it, and what your time is worth, and you know, whether or not you want to build your own. Is it going to make you a better archer? Probably not, to be honest. You know, the straightness of an arrow is it's not a moot point, but it's definitely not as big a factor as the guy behind it shooting it. They're a good arrow. They're definitely a good arrow. But again, is it worth it? That's just a judgment call that you'll have to make. I personally think they're a premium arrow. I think they're worth it if you can afford it and you loathe building arrows like I do. So food for thought. Okay, next question. I'll answer a couple more. Looks like I'm coming up in an hour. I think I'll just grab a couple more of these. I've had several questions about hunting solo. So I've had a lot of people say that they've had hunting partners back out or that they can't find a hunting partner. And I've had people ask the question is, should they go hunting alone? And do I have tips for hunting alone? And I think I've addressed it before. It's a pretty common question that I get. You know, even we have Paul works in our showroom. He and I had a conversation earlier this year. He was going to go on a Colorado elk hunt. He didn't really have a hunting partner that could go with him. And he was asking, you know, do I think he should go alone? That's a tough question for me to answer for somebody else, because everybody's a little bit different in how comfortable they are. You know, how they feel about their skill, how they feel about being alone. It's tough to answer, but in my opinion, yeah, I think you should still go. Like, if hunting is in your heart, if you really want to go hunting and you don't have a partner that can go with you, I think you should still go. I think it's a great opportunity to get out. I think it's, in my opinion, I look forward to it. I like hunting solo a lot. I like it for the reflection that I get. It's like, you know, 8 or 10 days, however many days I can carve out. It's like a look inside yourself, a kind of metric on who you are and how you're doing in life, how you feel about yourself, how you feel about, you know, hunting, how you feel. It's kind of a check-in. You never really in life get an opportunity, very rarely anymore, to spend time with yourself, to just think, to kind of self-assess, to think about, you know, how you are as a person. How you are as a father, how you are at, you know, chasing and achieving your goals and your dreams. What are your goals and your dreams? You very rarely today get a chance to kind of sit and self-assess and look at yourself in the mirror. And I think solo hunting gives you that opportunity to do so. You get days in the field, and that's just subsequent to the actual hunting itself. That's one thing I like about solo hunting. Another thing I like about solo hunting is the sense of satisfaction when I am successful solo hunting. I did the work, I did the planning, I did the preparation. You know, I harvested the animal, I packed it out on my own. I like that sense of satisfaction. It's unique in and to itself. It's different than it is with hunting with a partner. And it's something that I really like. And I'm not saying it's for everybody, but it's something that I really enjoy and I really like. So those are probably the primary reasons that I hunt alone. I also like the fact when I'm hunting alone is the decisions that I make are mine. You know, if I'm planning a stalk, I make the plan. I don't sit and look at my hunting buddy and say, what do you think? You know, and he gives me his ideas. I put together the plan and I execute on the plan, and whether it works out or not, I'm learning from it. So if it works out, great. I've learned something. If it doesn't work out, I've probably learned even more. It allows me to assess my abilities as a hunter, and it helps me learn at an accelerated pace, in my opinion. That's one thing I really like about solo hunting. And if I'm being completely honest, I think I am better. I'm a more successful hunter when I hunt on my own, because of that decision-making. Part of it's probably I'm a little bit more aggressive on my own, to be honest. I do what feels right. It's in my gut and I run with it. And, you know, I think over time you learn those lessons, and I just think it makes you a more confident hunter, which it certainly, I feel that way for me. So, you know, tips, I would say if it's intimidating, you know, bite it off one chunk at a time, do a night, do two nights, you know, just take it slow, you know, try it on your own, just see how you feel. You know, it takes time to get comfortable with yourself and kind of work over your fears if you've got them. But it won't take that long. And I do think it's worth it. I would say just take it slow, take it a day at a time. If you're calling elk solo, that can be tough. There's a lot of times those bulls, they can just pinpoint sound. I mean, they can literally walk right to you. If you're bugling or cow calling, they know exactly where that is. So it can be challenging because when you're calling elk, that bull's going to walk right into the exact spot that you made that sound. So a lot of those bulls are going to come in frontal, and they're going to walk into a distance to where they can expect to see the elk that was making the sound. So they may come in to 50, 60 yards and hang up because they can see where they expect to find an elk. And if they don't, they're probably going to hang up and move off. So that can be challenging. One tip I would offer is, you know, make the call, whether it's cow call or bugle, if you've got a bull bugle, and move up if you can. You know, give yourself an extra 20, 30, 40 yards, create some space between where you made that call towards that elk so that when that bull comes in, you know, maybe he's looking through you, he's looking past you. That can be helpful. Hunting thick terrain can be helpful because ultimately that bull's going to have to come in closer to see the elk that's making that sound. So if you're hunting, you know, thick lodgepole pine or areas that your field of view is pretty limited, it might require that bull to come that much closer to you. It's not the most fun to hunt, but you can't really see all that often, but that is one little strategy I've found that works for me. I think planning and preparation for solo hunting is that much more because you're in charge of everything. And if something goes wrong, it's on you to fix it. So you've got to get all your ducks in the row. You have to be that much more detailed in your planning and your preparation, everything from maps to your gear that you pack, how you're going to deal with an issue. You have to think through every possible situation that might occur and figure out how to get out of it. And then also have the gear and the knowledge, kind of work it through your mind to be able to get through it. So it's all on you. And in that, there's a lot of satisfaction. So I would say definitely, you know, if you're thinking about it, go solo hunting. I think it's worth it. I think you learn a lot about yourself. I think it's a good check-in with yourself. I think it's an opportunity to learn and grow. So I say go solo hunting. If you want to, if you got a hunting partner that backs out, go do it. Just go do it. So that's the advice I would give you. So that's kind of it for today. Looks like I'm an hour and 6 minutes in. Hopefully you guys learned something. Hopefully I got a chance to answer some of your questions. I'm going to work on getting some guests in the next couple of weeks. So hopefully have a guest on the next time I put a podcast out, but, shoot me feedback, you know, shoot me an email or a message. And like I said, I would love it if you would leave a rating and review. That will help me. And good luck to you guys. You guys that have late season tags, whether that's October, November timeframe, good luck to you. Keep hunting.